the Judo Edit podcast, where I chat with key athletes, coaches, and influential people to bring you insights into the international judo circuit. On this episode, I'm speaking with Emily Rossinot, who holds a wealth of knowledge, being both an elite judoka and a qualified nutritionist. Emily was born in Belgium, and she's a six-time Belgian national champion and under-23 European champion. Not to mention, she's competed in and collected multiple Grand Slam and Grand Prix medals everywhere from Qingdao to Tokyo and Baku. Emily can also call herself an author as she released her book Making Weight and Everything Else in September of last year. Now, I've tried to get pretty detailed in this interview and mine as much of her expertise as possible, so I hope you enjoy it. Hey, Emily, welcome to the Judo Edit podcast. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. You?
I'm really well. I've actually been really looking forward to this conversation because you have such a unique cross-section of knowledge of nutrition and just elite-level judo. So, could you outline how you started judo?
I started judo pretty early when I was six in Belgium. Now I live in Israel. It started very slowly, like, okay, a competition in Belgium, like very local, and it was fun, then another one and another one. And then before you know it, you're going outside of Belgium, competing international. It's fun. And because I liked it so much, I kept on doing it.
And then when did you start getting interested in nutrition and dietetics?
Well, when I was a cadet, I was aiming to compete in the European, so all the qualification tournaments. And you know, when you're a cadet, when you're like 16, you grow a lot, so you gain weight, but I had to stay same weight category because otherwise you don't have a chance to qualify. So at the end, it got very, very difficult for me. So I was living basically on yogurt and fruit because yogurt and fruit is very healthy. The problem with yogurt and fruit is it doesn't give you a lot of energy. So I was in the competition, I was actually feeling very weak. So after all this qualification period, I didn't make it to the Europeans that year, but I decided to make a change. So I started studying about nutrition. I bought a lot of nutrition books, but there was never actually, I didn't find one book that was very specific for judo. So I was reading a lot of nutrition books, mainly in English. But not even one book was specific for judo. Like you have a lot of books for power training. For bodybuilding, you have a lot of books for running and cycling, but for specific combat sports, there is not a lot.
Yeah, that's so true. And so you decided to study nutrition and then you decided to write your own book.
Yeah, that's true. I started nutrition in Belgium. So I have actually a degree in this. But the truth is I used those studies to improve my judo.
Right.
Not with the aim to go work in a hospital later or something, because this is something I really hate. this is not something I want to do. So just the goal was to improve my performance in judo through nutrition.
Right.
And then, yeah, in September I published a book about it.
Yeah, and so at what point did you begin writing that book?
I started writing this book when I got injured for the third time I tore the cross ligament. So it was going to be a very, very long rehab.
Yeah.
And I was kind of bored because if you're just doing rehab all the time and you're not doing judo, you can't run. You can do some power training, but not that much. So I was looking for something else besides judo. So Neil Adams gave me the idea to start writing a book about nutrition. I already wrote a trainer course in Belgium, like the nutrition part. But this was in Dutch, and not everybody can read Dutch. So Neil gave me the idea of really writing a book about it and put all the knowledge I gathered over the years down.
Yeah.
And so it happened.
I suppose to delineate between normal nutrition and specific weight-based sports, what's the difference between, you know, looking after weight in judo as opposed to other Olympic sports, say, for example, running or swimming, which doesn't have weight categories?
Yeah, so running and swimming, it's two endurance sports. So they eat a lot, they can eat a lot of carbs, and it doesn't really matter if they eat a little bit too much. It matters if they don't eat enough. but a little bit too much, it's not that big deal. Like 500 grams more, okay, maybe it makes them a little bit slower, but they don't have a certain point in their competition that they need to be at a certain weight.
Yeah.
Like in judo, you have to be in weighing under your weight, otherwise you don't compete.
Sure.
So this is very different. Also, judo combines, it's a combination of everything. Like you need power, you need to be fast, you also have to have endurance, because now some of the fights last even 8 minutes. Maybe there are even fights of 10 minutes. So you need to be able to cope with this. So it's a very unique sport.
And I suppose some of the terms which commonly get thrown around when we talk about judo and, you know, food and nutrition is weight loss and weight cutting. So
yeah.
Pretend that I'm a complete white belt. I don't know anything about judo. How would you describe the difference to me?
It's actually very easy. Weight loss is something that almost everybody in the first world countries want to do. Like they want to reduce their weight, but they want to reduce it and stay at this weight, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is weight loss. And weight cutting is, usually it's done in the last week before the competition. The goal is to reduce the weight just under the, so that you're under your weight.
Mm-hmm.
But then after the weigh-in, you restore this weight. So usually weight cutting is with dehydration. And it's to gain like a power advantage over the other one. But the stupid thing about this is that everybody is weight cutting, so there is no real power advantage. But anyway, so you reduce the weight before the weigh-in, and then after the weigh-in, you want to regain your strength. So you try to get your weight back to what it was before you started the weight cut. So there is very big difference.
So what you're saying is that a weight cut is very specific to the date of the weigh-in, where you're only maintaining that weight for a very short period of time?
Yeah.
I see that you fought at 48 kilograms during your international career. That's the lightest weight category for women. What are some of your hardest experiences with having to, you know, make weight for a competition, or ones that have stuck in your mind?
As I said, in cadets, I had a big problem because I didn't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I went up the weight, because yeah, in cadets I fought 44 kilos.
Yes.
Then I went up to 48. So I had some time to read a lot because my weight wasn't immediately too high. So I read a lot about it. And once I had to start weight cutting, like in the beginning, it was not that much, like maybe a kilo.
Yeah.
I had enough time to get a good method to do this. I never really had a big problem cutting weight, because when I was cutting weight, I knew exactly what to do. I knew what weight I had to be in which day.
Mm-hmm.
And I had everything planned out all the way up to the weigh-in.
Right. So when you say planned out, to what level of detail do you refer?
Very, very detailed. I knew the week before the competition, I knew which weight I had to be.
Mm-hmm.
For example, 2 days before the weigh-in, I really checked my weight almost all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I knew in the morning which weight I had to be. I knew after my weight cut, like when I did judo, I knew exactly how much I was going to lose with it.
Mm-hmm.
I knew exactly how much I would regain when I ate.
Mm-hmm.
I knew which weight I had to go to sleep. I knew how much weight I would lose during my sleep, so the difference between evening and morning, so really exactly.
Wow, that's so specific. And how did you...
Yes, that's specific.
How did you come up with that, to be able to forecast, I have to be, you know, 500 grams lighter in the morning, or...
It's mainly trial and error. I wrote down from the... Not the first competition I had to cut weight, but pretty early on, I started writing down all the weights.
Yeah.
And then after a weight cut, you say, okay, this was easy, this was difficult. And then you adjust, and slowly on, you get a real idea of what weight you need to be at a certain point.
Right. So that obviously built over some experience. How often would you be competing and having to make that 48 kilogram mark?
It depends. Like, for example, February is very busy month. There's like 5 competitions or something. So it would be maybe 3 times in February. But then maybe once a month. sometimes 2 times a month. It really depends on which competitions there were.
And so what were your favorite strategies that you found were most effective for losing the weight you needed just before the competition?
Most effective, it's actually, it's always a combination. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, if you just reduce the salt in your food, then you can lose like 1% of your body weight with doing nothing, just not eating salt. This is one. I always use this strategy. Also, if you stop eating a lot of fibers, mm-hmm. like just 2 days before the competition, mm-hmm. it means like no fruit and vegetables.
Yeah.
Then you can lose about 0.5%. So for me, it's about it's a few hundred grams. So it helps.
Well, I suppose every couple of hundred grams helps in this case, hey?
Yes. So everything helps.
How did your diet change if you were just, you know, during a training phase when there weren't any competitions and it was sort of just weight management as opposed to the 2 weeks before a competition? So you're not exactly cutting yet, but you're leading into the competition.
My diet most of the time was very healthy. Mm-hmm. Because you need to maintain a certain weight. You can't let it go because there is no competition. Some people make a peak of weight of 5 kilos different. It's not good. Mm. Just because they eat chips and chocolate and cake and biscuits. So you kind of need to keep your diet at all times. It's not always easy, of course. Before the competition, you start the weight cut with the salt and the fibers.
Yeah.
But this was basically the only difference. It's not that I reduced the energy intake before the competition.
Right.
Maybe just the last day or so.
Right. And in terms of how early you would then move into reducing that, you know, salt and fiber intake, how long before the weigh-in would you do that?
The salt, some people do this for like a week, but for my experience, I did it only the last 4 days before the weigh-in, yeah. Because I saw in like all the numbers I wrote down that it had the same effect.
Yeah.
So why would I start 2 days earlier? It's a bit dumb.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
But it's different in every person. It's different because now I'm also working with clients, mm-hmm. and some people really need to start 1 week before. Otherwise, the result is less.
Yeah. So what marks those people that need to, you know, start 1 week before? Is there a significant like pattern or?
No, a lot depends also on what you eat in the regular diet. There is no real pattern. Every person is different and you need to try all the time with the trial and error.
Yeah. This is the first time I've heard someone say something that detailed. Is that a common practice on the international circuit?
Not at all. I was very surprised because for the book we put some stories in from athletes to make people relate to it better. Mm-hmm. And I was very surprised that not all athletes do the salt cut. They need to lose a lot of weight, but they don't look at the salt. They never heard of it. Also the fibers, most people, they don't know.
Right.
So this was pretty surprising for me because when you research it a little bit in the internet, you can find those strategies. Not that difficult. It's not that big secret. I never saw someone really writing down everything except for Ronnie. Ronnie taught me to write down everything. She was a champion in this. Ronnie Schwartz.
Yeah, Ronnie Schwartz from Israel.
Yes.
Cool. I think, yeah, that's a very useful tool.
It doesn't only help to know what you need to eat and how your weight will go down, but it also helps a lot mentally. Because if you know, okay, now I'm fine. Now I'm under the weight I usually am. So it's it helps you mentally. Like if at the beginning of the week you have in mind, okay, I need to lose 3 kilos, 3 kilos is really a lot. But if you think about it and if you break it down and put it into steps, it's pretty okay. It's not that difficult.
Mm. And that was actually something I've also was going to ask you about in terms of, you know, having to make weight quite regularly. How did you sort of manage that? Or, you know, because you're not always feeling 100% because you're not always really happy or because you're sort of hungry. But how did you sort of deal with that?
It's difficult. Like the last day putting on a sweatsuit and go run, this is horrible. I don't run anymore. Just no way. No, it's of course it's very tough mentally making weight a lot of the times, but it's part of the game.
Yeah.
And if you have good strategy, it can help you.
Yep, so it's all in the planning, that's what you're saying?
Yep.
And so in your book, you've mentioned that there were some odd ways that some people, that you've seen some people try to make weight.
Well, I don't remember exactly which stories we've put in the book, but there was like a story that someone flew to Samoa for competition.
Uh-huh.
But Samoa from Europe, it's very far away. Like it takes you, I think, 48 hours.
Uh-huh.
But this person also had to lose weight.
Yeah.
Like she had to cut weight. So this person took all the sweat stuff in her suitcase
mm-hmm.
to take on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
So during this flight, she put on all the sweat stuff in the toilet and started running in place and like dancing on music and stuff like this
on the plane
to make weight on the plane.
Wow.
Yes, this is one of the most crazy stories I've heard.
Have you ever had to do anything that crazy or?
No.
Because you planned it all in advance.
I also never competed in Samoa, so it's also an advantage.
Yeah, gosh.
Also, you don't know when you get there how hot it's going to be and how it's going to feel like. Like, I guess that it feels completely different than Europe.
And so when you were mentioning before how you were growing up from being a cadet and having to change weight category, change weight categories from 44 to 48, and you didn't really know about weight cutting and things like that. I find that to be a very common pattern with judoka. I know that when I was younger, I didn't understand how weight cutting worked. I was pretty scared by it. So you've also mentioned that you don't think kids under the age of 15 should be weight cutting. What's your reasoning behind this?
No, I don't think it should cut weight. First of all, they're still growing.
Yeah.
So if they cut weight, it can affect their growth and it shouldn't be the goal. Like it's not healthy at all. So if you cut weight like week in, week out, you don't get the right amounts of energy. You don't get the right amount of nutrients like vitamins and minerals. So it can really disturb your growth. So this is one. Also, because they're growing, their bone mass is getting thick. Their bones are growing, so it's very important that they eat well for their bone mass. It's not something you can fix at later age. And people that cut weight at very early age probably will have problems with osteoporosis later on. So it's not a good thing. Also, maybe not 15, but like younger kids mm-hmm. of like 10, 11. Mm-hmm. I also heard that they cut weight, and this is crazy because their sweat development is not completely developed yet.
Yeah.
So their ability to lose the heat by sweating is less. So those kids get overheated a lot faster than grown-ups, and this can be very dangerous.
Right. So not only is it harder for them to lose weight, it's also got, you know, potential consequences in terms of like fainting and things like that.
Yes.
And so how does the progression sort of work as an athlete moves from like being like very young, like 10 until, you know, through cadets and moving into the senior? When should they start thinking about weight categories?
Well, I think that first of all, for all ages, eating healthy never damaged anyone. This is really not a problem.
Yeah.
As long as there is enough energy and enough nutrients, everything is fine. Like 10 years old shouldn't go run in a sweatsuit. This is simply crazy.
Yes.
But I heard stories like this, so I don't agree with this. Some people say, yeah, but you know, it's only like a kilo. But a kilo for a kid of, I don't know, 27 kilos, it's really a lot.
Yeah. It's like 4% body weight or something like that.
Yeah, it's really a lot. But people don't see it like this because they're grown-ups and for them 1 kilo, it's nothing. So they for sure shouldn't do it. They should just eat healthy. Maybe if there is early weigh-in, they can eat breakfast after weigh-in. This is tough. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Really weight cutting, I wouldn't do until the young athlete is fully grown. So it's very late. It's like for girls, it's around 16 years old. For boys, around 18.
Mm-hmm.
It depends a bit from person to person, of course. Then maybe they can cut a little bit of weight.
Yeah, and when you say a little bit of weight, what's that definition? Maybe in a percentage or?
Well, for all people, I wouldn't recommend to cut more than 5%. because a lot of research is done on 5%, just because it's a percentage that it's still ethical and not that many dangers. But if you cut more, then it gets scary. People actually died from weight cutting. Like, I think, when was it? In November, there was, I think, an Australia one of Muay Thai.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's dangerous, yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Now that you're a qualified nutritionist, you've done so much extensive research into nutrition for judo and optimum performance. When you look back on your career, is there anything that you would change about the way you handled your nutrition or your strategies or...
Like, in my senior years, I don't think so. I think I did it pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I would have been very happy if somebody would have helped me when I was a cadet.
Yeah.
Trying to reach 44 kilos.
For sure.
This would have been really helpful. And it's crazy that there is no help for this. It's crazy because in judo, weight is so important. At least there should be someone that the athletes can contact in case they have questions.
Yeah. And I suppose we sort of see you now coming to step into that role.
I hope so. This is the goal.
That's the goal.
No, I gathered so many knowledge throughout my years as an athlete. And now I want to use this knowledge to help other athletes. This was also the idea of the book.
In terms of growing up in a sport and nutrition is such a big factor, how does that cross over into mental health in terms of being exposed to eating disorders or, and how do you sort of guard from, you know, falling into a negative sort of pattern?
In judo there are a lot of eating disorders and a lot of people don't know about it. I've seen athletes not eating almost anything. Some athletes only eat 500 calories a day, which is crazy.
Wow. Is like, that like every day? Like even though they're...
For weeks.
Mm.
So if it's girls, then they don't get their period anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy. And they get so obsessed by it. So, yeah, eating disorders is a very big problem, but nobody speaks about it. Also, people think, yeah, okay, but it's only now and then after everything will be fine. But it's not to a lot of athletes that had to cut weight when they were competing. They grow into obesity when they quit. Like if you see at the former athletes, a lot of them are way above their weight category, but way, way, way above.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a little bit the result of, after all those years I was competing, I couldn't eat this and I couldn't eat that and not this. But now it's over and now I can eat whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a little bit overcompensating.
Yeah.
There are also athletes that... are going completely the other way,
mm-hmm.
that are so scared to see the number of the scale go up that they keep on working out really a lot and they keep their weight down. Some people even reduce their weight to a lot lower than their competition weight.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you lose a lot of muscles, your weight goes down.
Yeah. So.
But they're obsessed with it.
So, personally for you, what was it like making the transition out of being an elite competitor, having to, you know, maintain your diet to be very clean, to moving into retirement?
Nutrition-wise?
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you I also gained some weight.
I think that's inevitable.
In the beginning, I gained some weight. When I was competing, my weight was around 51 kilos,
mm-hmm.
sometimes up to 52.
Mm-hmm.
So, when I quit, my weight very quick jumped to 54, 55, I think, even. But after everything, like, settled down and my body relaxed, and I also relaxed with eating, because I also, I thought, yeah, but I didn't eat chips for that long time, so why can't I enjoy it now?
Mm-hmm.
So I had this period too, but luckily it stopped for me.
Yeah.
Also, like, nobody believes a fat dietitian, right?
So that's right.
Like, professional-wise, it wouldn't look so good.
Yeah.
But now everything's settled down. I eat whatever I want, whenever I want. But I'm simply not that hungry anymore because I'm not training like crazy anymore.
Yeah, for sure.
So now I think I'm around 50 kilos, which is pretty decent, I think.
Yeah, very reasonable.
Yeah, very okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen you, was it like a year ago after you were on holidays, and you still looked like you were on weight, even though you'd been holidaying through Asia for a while. So I'm very impressed.
Yeah. It was really fun time in Australia. But we were also climbing once in a while. So also we're living on a budget where we were traveling for a whole year. So we didn't go crazy on foot. And like at some point it also stops. You can't eat junk food all the time. So I think we were eating pretty healthy when we were on holiday.
Yeah, that's really good. I suppose looking at a weight management perspective now, looking at like the long term, you know, when you're just training, no competitions, there's also been a lot of, hype in the media at the moment about, you know, intermittent fasting type diets. What's your take on that?
Well, for people that are not training every day, for me, it's okay. Why those diets work? They only work because in the end they eat less than they burn. No, they eat less than they need. So this is why they lose weight. Intermittent fasting. So there are a few forms of this, but the whole goal of it is at some periods you don't eat.
Yeah.
So of course you eat less, so you lose weight. But for athletes, this is not good. Because they have trainings, and while you don't eat the glycogen in the muscle, so the sugar that you need for training in the muscles,
yep,
goes down because it gets used because you're not eating anything.
Yeah.
And this energy in your muscles, you actually really need for training. So I wouldn't recommend any athlete to do this.
Right. In terms of any consequences if you have low glycogen, apart from maybe not performing as well as usual, are there any other side effects?
No, not really.
I see. Okay, so you mentioned before the reason that you sort of began spending more time writing that book, Making Weight and Everything Else, was because you were injured. It sort of seems like this book being the first judo-specific weight book is sort of, you're leaving a bit of a legacy that is going to help so many people.
I hope so.
Do you regret those injuries? I mean, like, if you could go back, would you rather have gone to the Olympics?
Of course, everybody wants to go to the Olympics. But this is what happened, and you need to deal with it. Like, and it's better to take it the good way, because, like, I could also just sit at home crying that I was injured and doing absolutely nothing. But instead, I used this time to do something good. So also, like the first time I got a cross ligament, I did the same. That's the time I wrote the course for coaches, nutrition course for coaches in Belgium,
yes,
for judo coaches.
Yes.
So every time I did something that would actually help me further later on. Like there was also the second time that there was the trainer course in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
So I just used this time to get my degree as a coach in judo.
Yeah.
So every time you get injured, you need to do something with yourself. And the book is a result of this.
That's such a good way of, you know, making the best out of a bad situation, or even turning it around into a better situation. Now you have obviously finished and published that book, but I hear also providing nutritional support as an online business. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, because I don't only want to work with people that are living in my neighborhood, because it's too small. I prefer to see it bigger, and I also prefer to work with top athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, I don't want to work in a hospital or only make people lose weight. It's a little bit boring.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to keep it interesting. And now I'm working over the internet, just Skype chat, email, WhatsApp. Like there are many ways to connect to people. So I work with people still in Belgium, mm-hmm, because it's a home country,
mm-hmm,
but also Luxembourg, the Netherlands, somebody from Turkey now, South Africa. And it's also very interesting because in all those different countries, people eat a little bit different.
Mm.
Like, there are different habits, and it's nice to get to know this too.
What's been some of the biggest things you've learned from offering this?
It sounds maybe a little bit crazy, but like, for example, a slice of bread. I put in a menu one slice of bread. But maybe I need to add the grams, because apparently in South Africa, one slice of bread is 55 grams. Not like in most countries, like 20, 25. Like, it's double. So this was...
I think I like South
This
Africa.
Was a very good point to learn.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. So what else are you doing with your time?
I started coaching a national team, mainly for the cadets. Also, I started giving lectures, mainly in Belgium, because like in Dutch, it's way easier for me.
So when you say lectures, you mean to athletes, or is this just the public in general? Or?
No. I give to clubs, like to their coach and their the parents of the children, because most of the time it's children that are there. Ages from, I don't know, 12 to 16, something like this, with their parents. In Belgium, I also give lectures to coaches for all combat sports that are not that regulated, so that are with a lot of impacts on the head, like Thai box, boxing, like all those kind of things. Or for example, MMA, they do competition maybe 3 times a year, and also the weigh-in is very early, so it's normal that they can cut more weight, but it's also dangerous because this is how people also die, like from cutting too much. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's. I didn't realize there were that many variations.
Yeah, there is a lot.
If people, you know, obviously it's an internet-based business, so geographical locations aren't that much of a boundary. Are you happy to take athletes from who would reach out from Australia?
Yeah, it's just a little bit the problem with the times, but like we can talk, so why not?
Yeah, for sure. Any age parameters that you have in place, or?
No, not really. But like I said, I wouldn't make a program for a kid of 10 years old. Like, I would make a healthy program, but not a weight-cutting program. Because I don't go against the things I believe in. Like, it would be a bit stupid and hypocrite.
Exactly. So if people want to buy your book, where should they go?
They can just go to my website, www.amelierossene.com. It's in one word. And then they go to the webshop and there they can find the book.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, Emily. It's been great talking to you.
You're welcome. It was fun.
Thanks for listening to the third episode of the Judo Edit podcast. Before I sign off, I do very much encourage you to invest in buying Emily's book. It's not the type of book which is a one-off read. It's actually the type of book which serves as a continual reference point. So whenever a new nutritional question pops up, or you wanted to know whether a certain type of supplement is going to benefit you or not. So it's broken down by category, it's in everyday language, and it's specifically written with judo training and competition in mind. Apart from that, listen out for the next episode of the Judo Edit podcast. All the latest updates and exciting news will be on the Judo Edit Facebook page, so give it a follow. This is Melissa Budiato, signing off.